Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
And we welcome you to another edition of Tuesday People, the podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Albom. I'm the author of the book, Tuesdays with Maury, upon which this podcast is inspired. My friend and producer of this program, Lisa Goich, is alongside as always, and we are both in the same part of the country, which rarely happens. We're both in Southern California. Yes, and boy, sunshine out here is just criminal. Criminal, I say.
It is, isn't it?
Have weather this good in February. It's terrible. I'm looking at sun and blue skies, and I don't see any of that in Michigan until maybe May or April or June.
Well, I don't want to be that complainer person, but my allergies are so bad right now because everything's blooming.
Yeah, how terrible.
I know. Well, it is. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning with an asthma attack. So I had to go to the doctor this morning.
But well, moved back to Michigan.
Death. And
there's nothing blooming there. Everything's still dead, covered with snow. No problem.
I know. So I can't complain, but it is lovely to have no coat on in February.
Well, I have come to Los Angeles to witness the Super Bowl because as a lifelong Detroiter here, or at least career-long Detroiter, I've watched the Lions now play for close to 40 years, and they're never going to a Super Bowl. However, our former quarterback, who we traded to the Rams in one season after 12 years with the Lions, never winning a playoff game, in one season he went to the Super Bowl with the Rams, and he's going to play on Sunday. And so I'm going to witness it, and if he wins, I'm going to go home and say, well, that's as close as the Lions are coming to winning a Super Bowl, and I've seen it in my lifetime. I can die happy now.
Right. Actually, there are so many Detroit fans that are really pulling for the Rams right now because of Matt Stafford.
Yeah.
They're totally on it as if he is theirs, and this is our team at the Super Bowl.
Well, if he should win or win the MVP award and get hoisted up on the shoulders of his teammates and they take one of those iconic pictures, we're going to take that and we're just going to Photoshop the uniform and make everybody wearing, Honolulu blue uniforms of the Lions. And then we'll frame the photo and say the day that the Lions won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know.
As close as we come.
I like seeing all the support, though. It's really nice.
Yeah. It dovetails a little bit into today's subject, which talks about fame and attention. It's funny. We find ourselves, as we're broadcasting here, at the apex of some very interesting consequences of fame. The Joe Rogan controversy is spiraling as we record this. And here's a guy who was a wrestler, mixed martial arts fighter of some kind, and achieved some notoriety in that. But then began a podcast back when podcasting was new and developed a following. He wasn't exactly the kind of guy you would think would be a podcaster and at the beginning he talked to a lot of other wrestlers and things like that, but eventually he's talked to the whole world.
Yeah.
Politicians, actors, musicians, you name it. And now has a following of about 11 million people who listen to his podcast. And just by contrast, I don't think there's a single network TV show that gets 11 million people to watch it on a given broadcast.
Regularly, right. Yeah.
No, I mean one show.
Every week, right. Yeah.
Doesn't get it. In the old days, you used to get it, but you don't get TV shows that get 11 million people to watch anymore. If you took all the news, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN on a given night and added them up, I don't think they would be 11 million people. So that's huge. And you would say, well, he's as famous kind of as they come, right? And he's big time fame. And now he's embroiled in a controversy because of some shows that he did and some things that he said on previous shows. And now that fame is the very thing that he's sort of being attacked with. You're too big to allow these kinds of mistakes. And now he's a target. I don't know what the result will be, whether he'll be taken off of his platform. If so, he'll just find another one. But, it speaks to what fame has become. Fame brings consequences in this country. In many cases, very difficult and dire consequences. There are a lot of people who were famous and now have lost their jobs and have been disgraced for violations that, quite frankly, everyday people have done all the time and never get in trouble for it. But somebody who's famous, who's on television or on a big podcast or something, says the same sentence that someone out in society said that nobody's paying attention to, and that person loses their career. So we build people up to pop their bubble, to bring them down. It's always kind of a sport here in America. And as someone who has kind of walked the line between both sides of the celebrity or fame equation, I can tell you that it's a very complicated dynamic. You know, when I say walk the line on both sides, when I began as a writer and as a journalist, I was strictly on the side of observing fame. I began as a sports writer, many of you know, and I interviewed, well-known athletes. Nobody knew who I was at the beginning, and it didn't matter who I was. And I was always the lesser-known person or the unknown person speaking to the famous person. And I got to observe what that life was like as an outsider. I would pull up in a cheap rental car and go talk to an athlete who had a Maserati in the parking lot and a million people waiting for him on the other side of the door, whatever, and then write about that. And I was very close to it for many years. Then as fate would have it, I did some things and I began to broadcast on television and I wrote some books and things like that that became well known. And I became someone who was interviewed, someone who was talked to, someone who was asked for autographs, someone who was recognized when he was out. And, certainly not on the level of a major athlete, but certainly enough that you would notice the difference in my life versus someone who was working in an anonymous field. And for the most part, knock wood, I'm knocking. Mm-hmm. This isn't really wood, but whatever it is, it's close enough. I haven't had major, terrible scandals. I've been nicked a few times by things, and I don't think anybody could be in this world for 30, 40 years doing it isn't going to. And I've had certainly my share of critics, as anyone in the public light does. But I've had a chance to observe fame, celebrity. And I can tell you that I'm heartbroken when I see these surveys that show that when they ask young people today in America what they most want when they get older, and it's not money and it's not accomplishment. They want fame. They want to be known. They want to have followers. They want to be leaders in social influence, but not leaders like a lead because they look at the great work that I'm doing and people will follow me because I'm working hard. They just want to be known. Be known. They want people to know their name.
Yeah, that they don't want to. They're not looking at the other side of that coin.
You see it all the time in your work.
Yeah,
too, away from the podcast. Mm-hmm. Our Lisa works with the Grammy Awards and sees famous musicians and has known famous musicians her whole life and has worked with them in earlier incarnations of her life and all. And we've both seen this. Now, let me step back and say that Maury had an interesting sort of intersection with fame, because Maury was certainly not someone who was destined to become famous. He was a sociology professor at Brandeis University. Number one, I don't think most people could find Brandeis University on a map. Number two, I don't think most people could define sociology if you asked them what it is it the study of. except someone who majored in sociology.
Right.
So he was not on a track to become well-known.
No.
But he did. He did. How did it happen? Well, I'll share with you a little of, it was one of the first things that I asked Maury about in the first weeks where we started visiting with one another as he was dying from Lou Gehrig's disease. And I, of course, had only been reconnected with him because of Fame's intersection with Maury's life. Mm-hmm. When the Nightline program, which was hosted by Ted Koppel, got wind of this unusual professor who was dying and was talking to people about what it was like. Here is Maury beginning the story.
I didn't tell you how the Nightline became aware of me. The executive producer of Nightline, Richard Harris, is a Boston boy. He's now watching. He gets the Globe every day. Okay. So he saw the article. Okay. And he brought it to Ted. Okay. So that's how they called me.
The article that he's referring to was a piece that the Boston Globe wrote about Maury, which was his first kind of dip into fame. They mm-hmm. came out and wrote this very nice feature piece about him, about this professor teaching his final course. Now you see how Richard Harris, who's a friend of ours and listens to this podcast, so hello, Richard.
Yeah, and he's been a guest on our show.
Been a guest on our show. Mm-hmm. He brought the story to Ted Koppel, and they called. So here's the story as it continues in Maury's words.
Nightline got in touch with me. And it was a funny thing. They said, are you interested? I said, Monday. Are you interested? Yes. Tuesday. It's set. You want to do it? I said, yes. I said, when do you want to come? Tomorrow. Show up on Wednesday. You spend a day and a half here. Then a couple comes on Thursday afternoon.
Now, what's interesting about that is how fast Maury was going from unknown to known. He was marveling at it in hindsight. Are you interested? Yes. We'll come up tomorrow, day and a half, prep. Here comes the star of the show. They do an interview. This is the world that we live in here now. I mean, this was 1995. This happens now all the time where you don't even need a crew from Nightline to come. You can make a video. You can film yourself or your child or some circumstance that happened. And next thing you know, the whole world knows who you are. And everybody is commenting on you. And you have this instant injection of fame. Maury didn't do it through a TikTok video. He didn't go that fast. They still had to tape the program. So he had a chance to sort of see how it was going. And he, you know, at this point, Maury is 77, 78, right in that range. And he's seen it all. Nothing is really going to change him or impress him. He is dying, after all, from a terminal illness. And he notices that some of the crew, when Ted Koppel arrives, are sort of stirring.
Standing outside the door were two of the crew. One says, they've been around a day and a half. They saw me functioning. One says the other, oh, I'm so worried about what Ted is going to do to Maury. Tough guy. Huh? The other guy says, I'm so worried about Maury's going to do to Ted.
So obviously they thought it was a fair fight. Ted Koppel comes in. Now remember, Ted Koppel at this point is one of the most famous interviewers in America. And here he is in Maury's house.
Can you imagine how fast
this whole thing comes? Again, 78 years, not a lick of publicity. No. Nobody's writing about him as a professor at Brandeis or his work in the mental hospitals. I think I had asked him, had you ever been interviewed before, ever, before you got sick? And I think he said once on some little local program or something.
Yeah,
like
a paper
now
or something.
Now all of a sudden, here's Ted Koppel. And not only like, oh, you're walking past the camera and you happen to be on it. Hi, Mom. You are the subject. You are the subject of one of the most popular programs on television.
We'll be back with more Tuesday People right after this.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and we love our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit, or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So, Maury, to his credit, he's not walking into this fame thing so fast. He's still deciding if he's going to do it or not, unbeknownst to Ted Koppel and the crew. So he had a little test in mind. Here he talks about that.
He sits down. I said, okay, Ted, maybe we ought to begin by you telling me something from your heart. He looks at me. He's pretty cool. He said, okay. Starts telling me about his children and how much they mean to him and so on. I said, pretty good. He liked it. Then he said, have you ever watched my program? I said, about twice. He said, what? Twice? I said, yeah. I watched Oprah once. Yeah. Kind of looked at me. He said, what do you think? I said, I thought you were a narcissist.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so he got off to a strong start.
Bless his heart. I wish I could say that to people. I can never say those things out loud.
Well, I think somehow thinking that, you know, you're not going to be alive for all that much longer emboldens you in some cases. Yeah. And Maury was pretty honest anyhow. He probably would have said that even if it was perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
But he said, I thought you were a narcissist. And Ted Koppel kind of dismissed it, said, well, my wife won't let me be a narcissist, or I'm too ugly to be a narcissist, or something like that. But then, you know, I think Ted might have thought, well, we're done now feeling each other out. That was the first round of jabs, and now we're going to get into it. Maury wasn't done yet.
Oh, boy.
So then I said, Ted, you're not off the hook yet. He said, yeah. I said, tell me something about your spiritual life. He looked at me and said, I don't talk about such personal things to somebody I've only known for 10 minutes. I said, Ted, I don't have a lot of time to waste. So he liked that.
So that's how Maury kind of entered fame, which I think is a smarter way to do it. He waded into the water, toes first, then feet first, then ankles first, trying to make sure, is this too cold? Is this going to be too shocking? Can I trust what I'm about to do here? I think too many people in our country, when it comes to the opportunity to have some fame, they are so quick to jump on it, so quick to say, oh, that's what I want, that's what I want. Remember, we just said this is what everybody, young people, especially in the country, want. They don't think about the consequences. They don't poke like Maury poked Ted.
Yeah.
They don't prod a little bit and say, do I really want to do this or not? Is this a smart thing to do or not? Should I make this video? Should I press send on this video? Mm-hmm. Should I agree to be in my friend's TikTok? Should I do this Instagram? Everybody just does it. Look at how many people in this country get in trouble on a daily basis for things that they tweet. Now, there is nothing in this world that is more controllable to the perpetrator of the event than a tweet.
Right. Then you what comes control, out of your fingers, right? Yeah.
You can't control if you burp. You can't control if you sneeze. You can't control sometimes stumbling on words when they come out of your mouth. You can't control tripping. You can't control slipping on a banana peel. You can't control, not hitting the brakes fast enough. There are all kinds of things in life that will lead to embarrassing situations, whatever, that they're just kind of out of your control. Sending a tweet is 100% in your control.
That is true.
Nobody has ever been forced by circumstance to send a tweet. You could say to somebody, why were you driving so fast? I was in a hurry. I was late for work. I had to do it. Why did you cough like that on the microphone? Well, I couldn't help it. I have a cold. And there's all kinds of things that you can't control. A tweet, name me ever in the history of the world where someone said, I did not want to send that tweet. I did not want to press the button on that tweet. But there was a person behind me with a gun to my head. And he said, if you don't press that tweet now, I'm going to kill you and every member of your family.
That only happens on like TV shows, on CSI.
Right. Even that would be a far-fetched plot.
Yeah.
And yet, how many people get in trouble every day and have to issue apologies or end up losing their careers for tweets?
Right. And it's sometimes stuff you don't even know. Like, I don't think, let's say... And I'm sure you're going to head back into what Joe Rogan said or whatever, but sometimes people can say something so innocently, they don't mean it, or they don't even realize that what they're saying is bad. And that also can take a terrible turn and ruin somebody when it's right. unintentional.
But it only takes a turn to ruin somebody, generally, if it becomes famous. If it gets out into the ozone, it gets right. out into the crowd. So the point I'm making about these tweets is that nobody is forcing people to tweet, and yet they do it. Why? Mm. Because there is a temptation.
Yeah.
That same kernel of desire that people have to be known. You will know my name. I want people to know my name. You see athletes these days, it didn't start now. It's been going around for 20 years, but it didn't used to be 50 or 60 years ago. This would have been considered just improper.
Yeah.
When an athlete scores a touchdown, let's say it's a football game or a basket, they bang on their own chest. They point to themselves. They scream things like, my house.
Yeah.
It is, you will know my name. The world needs to know who I am. Well, it's that same thing that is at the backbone of this tweeting that gets people in trouble. It's a desire to have a large number of people. When I say large, it might only be 100 people that you tweet out to, or it might be 1 million people that you tweet out to. But you want them to know what yeah. you think. That is the same sort of relative of people saying, I want to perform in front of a lot of people. I want to be known by a lot of people. I want to be on camera. This desire to be known gets people in so much trouble.
Yeah.
Maury did not do that. This example I gave you, he walked in very slowly. If people did that before they sent out these tweets, they probably wouldn't get in as much trouble. If they ask themselves, do I really want to? Can I trust this audience? Is this something that I want to do? Let me check out this audience a little bit more. Let's poke and prod a little bit like he poked and prodded Topple. But no, people are in a hurry to be well known.
Yep.
And it gets us in a lot of trouble. And people do a lot of silly things as a result of wanting to be well known.
People should really rather want to have money instead of fame. Because I know that's always the question, right? Would you rather be have money or would you rather be famous? You know, like you'd have to choose between the two. It's way better to have money, no notoriety, to so to speak, and then do whatever you want in your life and not have to worry about people like watching your every move, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think as we go forward, people should be very, very wary of fame. And when I say fame, I don't want people to think like, well, this really doesn't pertain to me because I'm not going to be an actor. I'm not going to be a singer. I'm not talking about that fame anymore. That's fame from the 1960s.
Right.
In the 1960s, you were famous if you were a famous actor or a famous singer or a famous politician. That was about it. You know, there were some minor categories, but that was pretty much how you became well-known. Athlete, musician, entertainer, actor, politician.
Yeah, you had
very,
to do
very few some, other categories.
Yeah, you had to do something that had you in front of the public eye.
Right.
Which is now not the case. You can just be somebody in your kitchen that makes crazy food in the middle the country somewhere, and suddenly you have 5 million followers.
That's right. You put yourself, the world is a stage, the world is always just a phone away, just a digital connection away. The stage is always potentially there for you to be seen on. And so when I talk about fame now, I'm not talking about that old, I worked my whole life to try to be a well-known singer, or work my whole life, I got to get a break to be an actor, to be in a movie before I'm famous. No. You can become famous overnight. You can become famous in 5 minutes. There was a tea server in Pakistan who somehow got his picture taken when someone was just doing a photographic essay, I guess, on Pakistan. And this guy was very handsome. And within a week, he had a modeling contract.
My gosh.
With some agency in Europe.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So that's how fast your life can change. And this is a lesson now that we need to teach our children, as well as ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Fame should, for its own sake, should not be pursued. It is not worth it. It is a very dangerous ring of fire that you put yourself in, and more often than not, you get burned. Now, Maury understood when he went on the Nightline program what he was doing and why he wanted to do it. And I had actually said to him, I'm worried in between shows. I'm worried that they're exploiting you, Maury. You know, I don't want them to exploit you, because I loved Maury. And I thought, you know, well, are they just showing you because you're dying and, you know, you're getting worse and worse. And here, let's come back and see how bad he is now. You know, I was concerned about that. But Maury had already thought about that. And this is what he told me.
It has to be mutual exploitation. Right. He gives me the chance to get a message. Right. He gets a program that's very appealing. Right. It's just a matter of showing this guy on his deathbed or something. Forget it.
So Maury knew he wasn't going to be part of a circus act. He wanted to get his message about love, about meaning, about caring for one another, out to people through this medium, because he thought it was important. And he knew that, well, maybe they're using me, but I'm using them too. In that case, a worldwide forum to spread the message about caring, to spread the message about a problem, perhaps with starvation, with water, for children, a situation that's dangerous to human beings, that then the web and the internet can be a wonderful thing, because it's a conduit, a message. And in Maury's case, they didn't have the web, but they had television, which was well watched. And he used it to spread messages to people that moved them in ways that was remarkable. And he would talk about how people would come up to him and say, I saw you. There was one woman. Listen to him explain it here. She just took it to an incredible degree.
She came over with Charlie, and she was like enraptured with me. She came and kissed me. She said, I am so thrilled that I have met you. She said, when I saw you on the screen, I moved closer and closer and closer to the TV set. I wanted to pluck you out of that set and kiss you. She wasn't being melodramatic. She meant it. And she kissed me in such a tender way, as if to say, you melted my heart.
That's what Maury wanted to do. He wanted to melt hearts. He wanted to reach people, send a message, and get it across. So he used the world of fame for that end, not to become famous. And I guess that's the most positive way that you can do it. I certainly have used the mediums of television and radio and internet to help us with raise money for our orphanage in Haiti, for the kids that we have there. And it's been wonderful. There's been some people who have done some great reports from there, and it brought a lot of attention to the place and to the efforts that we're making. But we're not trying to get the kids famous. You know, there's a big difference. And I'm like, hey, let's turn them into TikTok stars. And I just think that as we get older and advance more and more in this century, how people handle fame, how people handle the lure of becoming quickly famous or quickly well-known or talked about or buzzed about or trending, a word that we never had in this vocabulary before 20 years ago, trending, this desire to be, as these young people answered in that survey, to be well-known above all else is going to be a lesson that we need to teach our kids. We need to teach ourselves, and we need to keep in a proper perspective. It will not be easy because the temptation will be there all the time. Andy Warhol's famous prediction of in the future, everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. He may have overshot it.
Yeah.
It might be everyone will be famous for 5 minutes. And then the fame goes away or it bites you in the rear end, like you become famous for the wrong reasons, and then you can't get away from it. And you're like, leave me alone. Why does everybody want to talk about me? And then you rue the day that you sought out that kind of attention. So something to think about. A lot of good words from Maury and the way that he approached it and his little modicum of fame. And hopefully you keep that minded if the situation ever approaches you. We hope you enjoyed our program today. We do this every week on Tuesdays. If you like what you heard, you can check out our website, WeTuesdayPeople.com. It's got information about the podcast and previous topics. We are happy to announce that we surpassed 1 million downloads.
How about them apples? Yep, we're at like 1,045,000 as of this recording. Huh?
1 million of anything is pretty astounding.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Even 1 million snowflakes is probably enough to make a snowman. So we thank you so very much for listening to us and for downloading this program and for sharing these messages. It means the world to me. And I know it means a great deal to Lisa, and we're happy to bring this to you. So thank you again, and we look forward to our chance to speak with you again. On behalf of Lisa Goich, I'm Mitch Albom saying, see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Tuesday People. To be part of our conversation, join the Tuesday People community at WeTuesdayPeople.com. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode and share it with your friends. We look forward to having you with us every Tuesday because, after all, we're Tuesday people.